You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
Who's that guy, Dub? Say his name. He's got no problem trying to stir shit up with me. Why not say his name? But what is the saddest commentary of all this is not the fact what he did. It's the laziness of the people that didn't realize what he did. Like, this is really absurd. And Dub, he needs to apologize for this. This is ridiculous. He is attacking my character.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, we're back together again. Here we go. You were out on the tour in Arkansas. I believe you were in Colorado. I was in Arizona. And here we are, man. The combine has came and went. We got a lot to get to, buddy.
It was good to be away for a little bit, and I enjoyed myself. I had some good times. I spent some time at the University of Arkansas, got to meet a lot of people there, which was great, coaches and staff, and then went out to Vail for a retreat, a work retreat, actually. It wasn't a vacation. It was an incredible, met some incredible people there giving speeches and learned quite a bit. So it was great, but it's good to be back. It's good to be talking about football again, and it's good to be able to, hopefully we can settle this ridiculous thing that was going on last week where I was on vacation.
Yeah, we got a fresh podcast for the aggregators to go ahead and pluck some stuff from and take it all the way out of context.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolute, just nonsense that we saw last week here. And we'll address it right off of the top here. Obviously, our pod before we went to our separate ways, I went to Arizona, you went to Arkansas, and then to Colorado, we were discussing the Raider way and Antonio Pierce. And we talked about this in two different podcasts, Michael. Two different podcasts. You had two different comments about it. One of them was about the combine and the long sheets and the 40 and the Raider way and what it meant when you were there with Al Davis and talking about how Pierce talks about how he's from Compton, which he brought up, by the way, in November at his opening press conference. And as an interim, he talked about NWA and straight out of Compton, and that's why he was built to be the Raiders head coach, which is like, hey, he should be proud from where he's from. Nobody is disputing that, but we're just saying, hey, maybe it's a little bit different. The Raider way is actually what Al Davis meant it to be in terms of size, speed, height, weight, and all that stuff, and evaluating the players. That's one comment. The second comment that you had was about the Mahomes rule stuff, which I think any objective person would say is absolutely ridiculous. You won the game on Christmas. Cool. Congratulations. Great job. Way to end the year. But to think that you have the recipe after getting two defensive touchdowns in 10 seconds and completing one pass after the first quarter, on the surface, to me at least, as an outside objective person, sounds a little bit ridiculous. That's what you were commenting on when you said, can someone just please tell him to shut up and be quiet because you don't have any recipe. This is the best player of your generation. Just focus on beating him and quit talking about it. Those two comments, Michael, were combined into one comment of that we're trying to say that you said this quote verbatim of, oh, he knows the Raider way, he just needs to shut up. It's like those are two separate comments from two fucking different podcasts. And they were combined and aggregated into one, and all of a sudden it became a shitstorm with all of these. I mean, Undisputed was talking about it. I saw Skip Bayless and Michael Irvin, Keyshawn Johnson, those guys talking about it for an 11 and a half minutes. I mean, we saw Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson talking about it. I mean, this thing was everywhere. And it was a quote that was augmented by one of the jackass, no talent hack aggregators.
No, you
out
can
there.
Say his name. That's, it was that guy, Dub. Say his name. He's got no problem trying to stir shit up with me. Why not say his name? I mean, here's a guy that, you know, he just aggregates stuff. I don't know where the hell he lives. But what is the saddest commentary of all this is not the fact what he did. It's the laziness of the people that didn't realize what he did.
Yep.
That no one went back and listened to the two separate podcasts. No one went back and reads the Daily Coach, where I talk about leadership on a constant basis. No one talks about Ryan Clark's time that I'm talking down to people. Has he ever listened to one podcast? Has he ever listened to anything that I've done? I've never listened to anything he's done, for the record. But can he ever listen to anything before he starts attacking me? Like, this is really absurd. And Dove, he needs to apologize for this. This is ridiculous. He is attacking my character. He's attacking this. And then these people are coming after me, which I got no problem. Look, if you want to avoid criticism, say nothing, right? If you want to avoid criticism, say nothing. I got no problem saying what I believe. That's a fact. But when you cross that line and you start accusing me of being something that I am not, then that's a dangerous slope. And you should do your homework on that slope. You should understand what you're talking about. Look, this Raider way, this is a fascinating thing. They haven't won anything since we went to the Super Bowl in 02. Okay, yep. So they act like they're this great superior franchise. Here's what the one thing I love. You know, some guy tweeted out, yeah, Lombardi was the guy that was the fox in the hen house. He was accused of that. Hey, brother, I was right. I was telling you how shitty it was. I was telling the owner how bad of a mistake it was to hire Art Shell, to hire Tom Walsh, to bring back this regime. Okay, I'm on record of saying that. The reason I got fired from the Raiders is because I said that. That's loyalty. If I would have just said everything's going to be great, that's dishonesty. I was loyal. I told him to his face how bad this was going to become. And it became bad, and it's been bad since. So call me the fox in the hen house, but make sure you call me right, because I was right. It was a disaster of epic proportions. And so this whole nonsense that Dove can combine these things and pretend he's a journalist, like, that's bullshit, Femi.
Yeah. It's 100% bullshit. It's not even ethical to go ahead and do that. And it's like people make mistakes oftentimes in journalism, and that's happened. Like, we're all humans. But this was not a mistake. This was a crafted, augmented quote of two separate takes from two different podcasts combined to make a quote that would go ahead and go out there and be viral, because you can go ahead now and get paid for tweets of going viral if you're verified. Like, it's absolute trash what he did. And we're not saying that you can't disagree with what Michael says. We welcome disagreement. We invite it, because I think that's healthy for the football discourse. You can disagree with Michael's opinion on the Raider way, but to go ahead and augment something that he did not say and create it into like this quote and run with it and act like that was the actual opinion is bullshit. That's the bullshit part to me.
And the laziness of the people who are doing the debate, they want to call themselves debaters. If you're a debater, what's the number one thing you must be able to do is have all the data. Yep. You must be able to do extensive research.
These guys
are just reading flip cards, have all the facts, and they're over there attacking, and they've just watched the clip. And so then they spread this misinformation. You wonder why we have such bad information in the National Football League or throughout the world? I mean, it's comical. Like, I don't understand how you can stand there and argue something when you haven't taken 5 minutes to discuss it. I argue about how bad of a head coach Robert Saleh is. I watch him. I study his tape. I argue about how good somebody is. I watch him. I study the tape. Like, I'm not giving opinions just based on a whim. Like, I'm going to put the work in. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. So anything else you have on this? Because I'm ready to move on from these aggregating idiots and all that stuff. But no, I want to talk football, because
I'm done with it. Bella's done with it, too, as you can hear in the background.
Bella, tell them to quit the nonsense, all right?
Yeah.
She's telling them. So let's move on and talk about some damn football, all right? Because we had actually some breaking news coming this morning here. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Mike Evans came to an agreement on a two-year deal, $56 million. It'll be $35 million guaranteed there for Mike Evans, who many people thought might go ahead and get to the open market in free agency. Well, the Buccaneers able to come to an agreement before tomorrow's franchise tag deadline for all the guys who could be franchise tag candidates. They get Mike Evans done, and he's going back to Tampa Bay, which maybe is a nice little piece there in terms of them pitching Baker Mayfield on coming back.
Well, I think there's a lot of talk around whether it's reality or not, but there seems to be a lot of talk that Baker is going to be a hot commodity in free agency. And so I think they felt like they needed to do this. And then, are they going to tag Baker? I don't know if they could afford that cap number to tag him. But this deal with Mike Evans, I mean, look, when you're getting paid $25.5 million to play wide receiver in a league, I don't know how you turn that deal down. And look, let's face it. I don't know where these numbers – I think one of the things that has happened, Femi, while we were gone, is that cap – we saw the cap increase – is I have no idea where these – numbers are going to jump up to, because the one thing we do know is there's not enough good players to pay all the money to. So what's going to happen is the better players, those numbers at the positions are going to get elevated. And so when you just simply look at some of the numbers that you see at the receiver position, and all of a sudden now you're going to see a giant leap because of the cap increase, which is essentially what you want. I mean, that's the whole idea of this system is you want somebody, you want it to come in where you're having the ability where water starts to seek its level. And I think that when you do that, it becomes really important. And you can see that the market has really taken over. I mean, when you see what Tyreek Hill got 30 per year, Davante Adams averaged 28, and, you know, they put him at 25, which is right where A.J. Brown is. They kind of kept him in the market. So I was expecting it to be a little bit of a jump, but that he went basically market value and he took the deal on a short term.
Yeah, that salary cap was announced at $255.4 million. Many around the league saying much higher than they expected, but I mean, the NFL is making money hand over fist with all the revenue, the TV contracts, so that you're going to continue to see that salary cap go up and up and up and up.
Yep.
But we do have a number of receivers who are eligible for contracts. I mean, T. Higgins is out there for Cincinnati. I'm sure he's looking at this contract saying that I should be in line with that. And a guy who might quote-unquote reset the market, or at least get near the top, Justin Jefferson with the Minnesota Vikings, who they came out during the combine and said, we have never once thought about trading Justin Jefferson. He's a Minnesota Viking. And then, of course, there's CeeDee Lamb down in Dallas, who's coming off an all-pro season as well. So that's good news for those guys as this money continues to get bigger and bigger and they're in line for new contracts.
Well, I think Jefferson's going to break the 30 per year average. He's going to break that. And then all of a sudden, if he breaks that 30 per year and they re-sign Kirk Cousins, I mean, there's two players that are going to eat up, you know, what, 70 million of your cap?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, you're going to have to figure out some things. And that's where, you know, you've got to make some decisions. Higgins at 21 million now looks like a bargain when they franchise him, 21.86 million. So they got that him under contract. So that looks like it's a really good thing. I think to me, the way this receiver market continues to rise, you got to keep drafting receivers in those third, fourth, do what Green Bay is doing, you know, get a lot of good young players. And then eventually you're going to sign one to a cheaper deal if you can, and then you're going to have to let some of them go. You can't pay everybody $40 million, $35 million a year. So, but look, I think that what the Bucs did clearly is now they're going to target Baker and try to get him signed. I saw some predictions for these quarterback numbers that just were staggering. I mean, you know, over 50 million for Tua. I couldn't believe that. And Baker's going to get somewhere between 40 and 50 million. Still can't see that. I don't see how that's going to be. I think as the numbers rise, the quality of play is not going to rise. Like, if anybody thinks that Baker was the reason they won, then somebody's thinking differently down there. Baker played, you know, better than he did the year for Carolina. But are you sure you can win a Super Bowl with Baker? Are you convinced of that, Femi?
I'm not convinced. I mean, talk about maybe he should have won Comeback Player of the Year, going from two teams last year to now he's about to go and make like $40, $50 million a year in the year that he had there leading the Buccaneers to an NFC South Championship, 9-8. They're 28 TDs, 10 interceptions, 4,000 passing yards for Baker Mayfield, who we expect to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer in 2024. But as Michael said, hey, there could be some suitors out there for Baker Mayfield that are in the veteran quarterback market. I think it's going to be a fascinating NFL free agency, which gets underway a week from now, the legal tampering period. We'll talk more about the combine, though, coming up next year. This is the GM Shuffle. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game by game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-7
789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Well, the Niners' defensive coordinator search is over since we've been away here, Michael. The Niners went ahead and promoted in-house Nick Sorensen, who is their defensive passing game and nickelbacks corner, to be their new defensive coordinator after a long search. That was kind of a windy defensive coordinator search. There were some names that were being thrown out there that I thought were just – I mean, somebody even tweeted about Bill Belichick being the Niners' defensive coordinator. I saw that. I just chuckled.
Pete
I
was Carroll.
Like, I was like, is this real?
I think Pete Carroll just got back. I mean, I think he's been in Hawaii, I guess. You know, look, I think at the end of the day, what was going on in San Francisco was they were trying to teach Steve Wilks what they did. And that's always harder than trying to have somebody who's brought up in the system. So I think that became the core issue of the problem with Wilks. Not that Wilks isn't a good coach, not that Wilks can't do what he wants to do, but he was asked to take a tough job, because when you have a system of defense, for example, Vic Fangio goes to Philadelphia, they're not telling Vic to run the Eagle defense with Jonathan Gannon, or they're not telling Vic to run this defense. Vic's going to install his terminology, his defense, and everybody's got to learn it. Where the opposite was the case in San Francisco, they hired Wilks with the understanding that he would learn that. And that becomes a little bit of a problem. It's hard to think quickly on your feet when you're trying to call a defense that's really not your defense, that you haven't been born and bred in, you know? So I think that was the issue. And I think what you see with the hiring of Sorensen and then bringing Staley in is, I think ultimately Staley's job is to help and be an eyes and ears for Kyle on that side of the ball defensively, to make sure that, you know, everything is getting aligned. Now, Staley comes in with a different system. He's from the Vic Fangio scheme, which is a three-man line, which is why I never really thought he was ever going to become the coordinator there, because he's always been a three-man line guy. Mm-hmm. And so now they're a four-man line team. So, but I think what he'll do is forget the scheme. He'll be in there to strategize, to help them strategize on a game plan each week. To me, that's what I see his role as doing, which will be fascinating, you know, and I think as it moves forward. I don't think Kyle, who's gone for it the least amount of times on fourth down, I don't think Staley's going to be able to interject on game day, go for it, in the reckless fashion that we've seen.
We'll see a Brandon Staley influence with fourth and one decisions for the 49ers there. But I think that's a really interesting point that you brought up, though, about Steve Wilks having to run the Niners defensive scheme, because isn't that similar to what happened with Vance Joseph in Denver early in the season, where like he was like Sean Payton wanted him to run a specific defense, and then we saw them get lit up for 70 points by Miami. It was, and that was a talk of, wow, is Vance Joseph going to lose his job until the midseason point when they finally turned things around there defensively for Denver and they got on that roll. It's weird. Like, why do I guess teams do that, to say, hey, like, we want you to come in, we like you, but we want you to run our stuff, don't run your stuff? That seems a little bit backwards to me, at least.
It is backwards, but what you're hoping to do is the guy can blend in and then come up with something that's similar to what you do but makes it better, right? So we saw Saleh come in and run Pete's scheme, and he ran it from as basic as Pete ran it when Pete invented it. And then D'Amico came in and kind of advanced it and took it to another level. And so what you're hoping for is somebody who learns it and then takes it to another level. You're looking for that next step. But when you watch the tape and you see them try to blitz, or you see their alignment, or the most telling thing was their run fits were horrendous. You know, they got poor run fits. They couldn't handle that. So for me, I think that's the hard task. It's that job. Wilks was put in a very challenging position that you think on paper it could work. But then when you get in there, and then I think what you have to do is the staff, right? When you're the coordinator and the staff knows the defense better than you know it, that becomes a little bit of an awkward situation, right? Now you're trying to, you know, you're leading these guys in the room and they don't really feel like you have as much grasp of what's going on. of what's happening. And there's a lot of eye rolls and there's a lot of, oh no. And then all of a sudden, Steve probably felt like, okay, how do I make this work? You know, I'll make it. And again, let's do it by committee. And you and I both know they've never dedicated a monument to a committee. And that makes it even worse, right? Yeah. When you try to combine everything, it makes it worse. And, you know, we saw teams move the ball on San Francisco, but their offense got that lead that they really, you know, you could never consistently move it. Now with Sorensen running their scheme, going back to what they do, and then having someone who's been a coordinator before helping him, kind of being a mentor to him, even though he's from a different scheme, he might be able to offer an idea, and then Sorensen can put that idea in the context of the defense.
Yeah, he's probably got a little bit firmer of a grasp of what's going on there with the defense that Kyle wants him to run there, Nick Sorensen, now the defensive coordinator of the Niners. What did you make of the report of them potentially pursuing Steve Spagnuolo, the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator? Is that something that, like, would that be even normal to go ahead and make a lateral move like that? I mean, obviously Spag signed the extension in Kansas City, but I thought that was sort of a strange report. They're not saying that it was wrong, but an interesting development and a kind of a nugget there from Dan Graziano at ESPN.
I mean, I think obviously, why wouldn't you? If he's available, make a call. I don't think it probably got past the phone call because the Chiefs were probably going to match whatever he was offered. You know, you're not leaving for a lateral job unless it's a distinctive amount of money that's going to separate. I don't think the Chiefs were going to back down from the cash. Now, that would have been a different scheme for the 49ers to run, more blitz heavy. They would have had a given in to Spag. He would have taken that job under, I'm going to run this defense and I'll fit in. That would have been a watershed moment in the defensive history of the 49ers. So look, I think it's your job to make a phone. I think we have a hard time understanding inquiries and level of interest, right? Like, I was told that there were a lot of coaches in college that were rumored to be the next Alabama coach, and all it did is get them raised when they never even got a phone call, right? They never even got a phone call from Alabama. So sometimes these notions, these ideas are more leverage for the next contract.
Yeah. Those agents are working those phones, man. You got to get your pay. Yeah. Got to get your guy paid
a little
bit.
They're working them hard now. Now they're working them hard. Now they have to create this market. And with all this extra cap room, you know, I think what the Evans deal showed was there wasn't, like, if Evans would have gotten 31, 32, 33, you could say, see, there's the cap, really the increase of the cap really taken over. When he got a $25 million deal, which puts him in the top five receivers in the league, which is kind of what he is.
Let's get to the draft. The scouting combine came and went there in Indianapolis, and Caleb Williams, the presumptive number one overall pick, brought out a couple of different headlines. The first one being debunking the reports and the rumors that he did not want to play for the Chicago Bears. Williams said, quote, and he told this to Pete Thamel at ESPN, "If I get drafted by the Bears, I'll be excited. If they trade the pick and I get drafted by someone else, I'll be just as excited," because there was rumors that he wanted to play for the Commanders, given the fact that he's from the Washington, D.C. area, that maybe he didn't really want Chicago. But it sounds like Caleb Williams is ready to go anywhere else that they're going to pick him. I think he just wants to go first overall.
Right. And I think, to me, before anyone judges Caleb Williams, you should have a conversation, because as you've seen what happened to our program, the misinformation that's out there, the way they can put together certain phrases and context, you know, and make someone look different than they really are is out there. You got to be aware of it. And so I'm not going to judge Caleb Williams on anything that someone says about him, because it's unfair. You know, it really is unfair. His father, he hasn't hired an agent. His father's handling all that through, I believe, an attorney named Jeff Kessler, who goes back to the league for years. He's helping him handle some of those situations. And, you know, I think a lot of it's going to come down to the likability of Caleb as it relates to the one-on-one meetings with these teams. I mean, look, we saw Josh Harris, the owner, say, you know, the Washington team, he's in all these quarterback meetings. Now, you know, I mean, obviously he's trusting Adam Peters to do it, but he wants to have hands on the ground. You know, the other thing I found fascinating, Femi, you know, Rich McKay, who's no longer involved in football.
Yep.
The Atlanta Falcons, you know, they gave everything over to Fontenot and he didn't want it. He's at the combine. Now they're going to say he's at the combine because he's on the competition committee. Yeah, right. Okay. I got that. All right.
Rich is just going to
give him. You never leave. He's never leaving.
He's going to take a hands-off approach as he's grinding the tape and sitting in all the meetings.
Yeah, so he's sitting there. I'm an Indy. You know, he's at St. Elmo's having shrimp cocktail. But, hey, look, I'm not involved with the Falcons front office anymore. Yeah, right.
Not involved. Well, what about this part of the Caleb Williams story, though? Because he came out and said that he's not going to do the medical testing. So he didn't do the medical stuff at the Combine, which is the biggest reason the Combine is in Indianapolis and the biggest reason for the scouting Combine for all 32 teams is to get medical reports on all of these draft prospects. Williams said this, quote, "For the medical stuff, I'll be doing the medical stuff, just not here in Indy. I'll be doing it at the team interviews. Not 32 teams can draft me. There's only one of me, so the teams that I go to for my visit, those teams will have the medical, and that will be it." We really haven't seen that from a draft prospect, but I guess if you have the leverage, for whatever it's worth here, for Caleb Williams, I guess you might as well use it. But I guess it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, because wouldn't you rather just do it once instead of doing it for each team that you go visit with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the fact that he will do it is important. But yeah, you're right. I mean, once, you know, it's a long, grueling day. Don't get me wrong. When you go there and do the medical, and you could get, obviously, you could get, you know, there's seven tables of different doctors from different teams where you go to every one of those seven tables and they poke and pull you around and all that. And so it's not the most streamlined process, whereas now he only has to pee once and where he's going to go to three teams. I'm picking three teams. But the problem is what he does is like, how does he say, let's just hypothetically say, you know, a team picking in the 10 is going to give Ryan Poles that once in a lifetime offer that he never thought he would have. How does he get the medical there? Now, what could happen in that situation is the Bears could share the medical with the team they're talking to. Right? They could share that, which then would help with facilitate the trade where nobody would know you're trying to trade up. And I think that's ultimately what would have to happen.
It's an interesting development with this combine thing. Caleb Williams is a guy that it feels like a lot of people have been doing a lot of talking for him. So it was nice to actually hear from him this week at the combine, because like there was a story about he wants to own equity in a team. He might go back to school because of NIL, like all this stuff. That's just like, come on, like, can we just hear from Caleb? And Caleb was able to clear the air. He said, hey, I'll go anywhere. And now the actual evaluation of the football comes into where he's still the number one pick, right? Like, there's nothing that's going to surprise us. Like, the DraftKings has him at like minus 1100 to go first overall. I think a lot of people think that he's like, whoever, whether it's the Bears or someone else, he's going number one, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it seems that way right now. I think there's so much misinformation out there right now, especially come draft time, that you have to kind of tail it back. But it doesn't sound like true. What I've heard is that he's not. Now, this is a good week to start working on the draft for me, especially on the quarterbacks, which I plan to do and go forward. So, yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, now there's all these different, you know, where's Drake May? Where's Jaden Daniels? All these rumors that come out. It'd be fascinating to hear how it all works out. But I think you got to trust your own eyes.
We'll talk about May, Daniels, and Williams. Neither guy threw at the combine. Big deal, no deal. We'll discuss it next year on the GM Shuffle. Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Look, I'll preface this by saying that if you watched any Saturday football this past fall, I'm sure you are very familiar with the game of Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, he was the best wide receiver in the country, maybe the best player in the country there. But Harrison, this week at the Combine, decided not to work out, which was not a surprise. Most top prospects these days, I guess, now don't do the workouts. But Harrison didn't even meet with the media, which was a little bit of a surprise. He skipped the media session there and says that it sounds like he's not going to do any workouts during this process except for maybe going on some of these visits. This is an eyebrow-raising move, not, I guess, something that's going to hurt his quote-unquote draft stock, because I think he's still one of the best players in the draft. But is this maybe the way of the future for some of these top prospects, Michael?
You know, I hope it's not, because I think we need that information, you know, and you need to be able to see a kid work out. Now, I don't think we should work him out 75 times. And I do think you want to watch a guy. If you're going to make a significant investment in a player, you want to watch him work out. There are a lot of times where we've gone to watch a guy on tape and the tape and the workout kind of don't come together, you know, and the 40 time doesn't trans transcend itself on. So I hope that's not the case. You know, look, there's a lot of competition. Neighbors is a guy that people love. You know, I'm sure he's going to work out at his pro day there at LSU, which is fine. I mean, the problem with the combine is it's such a long day. You go through the medical. Are you really at your peak performance level when you do work out? You know, I think that's probably, and some of these guys that have leverage choose to wait. But this one to me is a little bit of an alarm because you want this workout. I'm not saying you're not going to draft a guy, but how many times has a guy been a can't miss and he misses? You know, can't miss and yet he misses. And so you always want more data. We're in the data collection business. And so you have to kind of try to do it. I'm not saying it's going to shape your opinion, but at receiver, there's so little press coverage. There's so little ability to evaluate him playing the pro position that you worry about it, right? You say, oh, and what's the biggest mistake? I mean, when you go through the draft, how many misses on receivers have there been? I mean, even guys that work out, right? Yeah. I mean, so like, I get it, you know, look, Jerry Rice was the third receiver taken in that draft. Al Toon had concussions. Eddie Brown was great. Just didn't play as long. His hands got beat up. But like, think about it, you know, I mean, when you go through the receiver draft and you look at some of these receivers who were drafted third, fourth round that end up being better than the guys drafted in the first, you always want to. So, you know, I hope this doesn't continue. If it works for him, God bless.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who would say, hey, no big deal, will probably point back to the 2020 combine, to where they had the 2020 scouting combine right before COVID hit. So there was no pro days or visits. It was all the stuff was on Zoom before they end up doing the virtual draft later on that spring. And said, hey, like Jamar Chase and those guys, Chase missed his whole junior season. He opted out of that. Penei Sewell opted out of his whole junior season. Micah Parsons opted out of his junior season, and they just went ahead and got ready.
Parsons paid a price for that, though. Parsons should not have been the 11th pick overall in the draft. Parsons was too good of a player at Penn State. Yeah. Well, you know, he took, you know, I think it hurt him, you know, whereas Penei Sewell was a good player, you know, Chase, you know, in the Southeast Conference is a little bit, you can see more, you know, you can watch him against Alabama, do press coverage. So there's a little bit, but I do think that, you know, that sometimes when you let the workout rule the evaluation, that's a problem too.
Yeah. And Harrison, I'm sure his tape is as good as anybody's for those who are the trained eye and watch it. I mean, just watching on Saturdays, watching him play, it's like, my gosh, this guy he's got everything you'd want from an NFL wide receiver. So my guess is that it translates, but it just seems a little strange that he decided not to work out. Like you said, hopefully that's not the case for guys going forward. We've seen it kind of be the case for these quarterbacks, though, because the top three consensus guys, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, neither of those guys threw at the combine this week in Indianapolis. And it's interesting because you hear these guys, they'll do the interviews with the media, and the first thing that they say is like, hey, tell us about yourself. Well, I'm a competitor. Well, where were you this week? Like, you know, where were you? Like, if you're like, show me, like, don't tell me you're a competitor. Show me you're a competitor. And I think back to last year where CJ Stroud was one of the top two guys. And he said, F it. I'm still going to throw. Like, cause I like football. I'm going to throw and I want to show off my skills. Richardson was out there throwing. Levis, whatever you think about him, he was out there throwing. And this year it was McCarthy and Penix and Bo Nix. Those are the guys that we got to see out there throw. The top three guys didn't. And I don't know, man. Like I'm not old guy yelling at the clouds, but if you're telling me you love ball, show me that you love ball. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, it just seems like my opinion.
I mean, why wouldn't you throw? Like, I can get not running the 40, but if you got a gun and you can throw it, like, nobody's going to – if the receiver drops the ball, nobody's going to ding you for it.
Exactly.
You know, they just want to see your rhythm. They want to see your movement, you know. And like Michael Penix, I mean, all he can do is improve himself. They want to see, you know, the delivery, where you put the football. Look, nobody's – it's just really more of a visual thing. And so, you know, if you think that when you go back to your home base and you're throwing in a scripted agent workout, that really does something different. I mean, I think – to me, I would rather work out the combine, get it over, and say, look, I'm not working out again. I'm not running a 40. I'm not working out. That you got me. That's it. Like, I would rather do that than have to wait around and then have people call me on the phone, hey, can I have a private workout or come to my campus and work out? Like, get it over with.
Yeah, that'd be my theory as well. And I'm sure it's a lot of this is like the guys maybe they'd want to throw, but the agent says, you know what, it's just not worth it. What's the upside? That's the phase they use. What's the upside? Well, what's the downside? Like you said, I don't think anybody's expecting the combine throwing session to be perfect. We all know that you're throwing to guys you're not familiar with. Like this is not going to be perfect. Just go out there and throw and let it spray and quote unquote compete, because you say you love to compete. Show us.
Yeah, but the problem is, I think you can't ding the kid because the agent could be saying, don't do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't throw. Here's what we're going to do. The football suck there. The receivers don't run the right routes, you know, all that. We can handle it. We can script it. We're going to get, you know, with your coach and make it look perfect, which is what we want. And it's like, does anybody go back and watch that? Like, seriously, does anybody go? No. I mean, you're going to go back and watch the game tape. All you're doing is trying to see the arm live. That's really what you want to see. You want to see the arm live. You want to see the foot feet. You want to see his foot quickness tied to his arm. Like, that's really what you're trying to see. You're not trying to reinvent the wheel, you know? And so once you see that, does anybody go back and watch their workout tape and say, well, see in the workout, here it is? They're going back and watch this game tape.
100%. And we were able to see Penix. He threw, and people were raving about Penix and what he can do. J.J. McCarthy got some rave reviews there. And, like, it wasn't perfect for all those guys, but they threw, and people wanted to see him throw. And hey, they put out their skill set for everyone to see it live.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately – and then the interviews matter, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, what would you – look, ultimately what's going to happen to all these quarterbacks is you're going to sit down and somebody's going to cut out every third down of every game they've ever played. And that's the tape that's going to either tell you he is or he isn't. That third down tape, when the game's on the line, a possession down, that tape is going to tell you how he executes, how he thinks, how he's quick-minded, what his footwork is under pressure, how he handles that. That's the tape that's the most important tape of all.
You know, what was really interesting to me and eyebrow raising is that, yes, guys sometimes don't throw, and Bryce Young didn't throw last year either, so this isn't shocking, but more often than not, everybody, like, does the weigh-ins. They do the measurements. Well, Jaden Daniels did not, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. He didn't do any of the weigh-ins. He didn't do the measurements. Caleb Williams, he measured. He weighed in. Drake May, he measured. He weighed in. Jaden Daniels, are you starting to worry? Is he 185? Is he 190?
Yeah, I think,
is that the concern?
I think that was the thing. I think they wanted to control his weight. Like, obviously, they're hearing the noise of his body type, but look, you're going to see his body. And I think if you look at Tom Brady's body when he came out to where Tom Brady's body was when he got done, I mean, they're going to change.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem with Embiid. His body looks exactly the same as if he came out of college. Like, he's done nothing to change his body. So that's the thing. And so, this is all about protection of what people might perceive. Look, I think Daniels is a really good player. He's been a good player. His tape is good. I mean, is he thin and linear? Look, what quarterback of the rookie class was the only one who played all 16 games? The smallest one, Bryce Young. All 17 games, the smallest one, Bryce Young. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves there.
Yeah, no, it's he's listed at 6'4", 210 on LSU's roster. We'll see if that's what he ultimately weighs in. He says he's going to do all this stuff at the LSU Pro Day, which is coming up around the corner. Yeah. So I guess we'll get the answers to the questions that we have, just a little bit delayed. If this ends up being the move, just kind of the wrap a bow on this combine discussion, I guess what is going to be the purpose of the combine going forward? Is it still just going to be the interviews and the medicals? Because if guys are just opting out, then it's like, all right, do we even need the TV show aspect of it?
Well, they're never going to change. I mean, the ratings, look at the LSU Pro Day. It will be a great rating. I bet the combine had better ratings than any of these NBA games. What do you think of that? They killed it, I'm sure. No, I mean, look, there's only going to be about 10 guys that can control that environment. And then everybody else has got to go work. Everybody's trying to make money there. Everybody's trying to prove they can run fast, prove they're a good workout. You know, you invite 300, just say 20 don't do it. The drills, the other 280 are trying to make money. So the combine's always going to be in play.
Xavier Worthy, is he an Al Davis guy running that 4.2 140?
You know, I didn't. What was his height? I mean, see, that's.
I think he's like 5'9", 5'10", or something like that.
Yeah, see that. You know, that would not entice him. So he wants somebody that's 6'2" that runs that. Now, would he take him? Yeah, but he, again, it's size and speed. It's just not speed, right? And so you got to. And so one of the things that you have to do when you are a size and speed team, you have restrictions, or you have criteria for height, weight, and speed. And when you meet the criteria, you become what they call a clean player. Whereas if you don't meet that, Worthy is a Z player in the system. Even though he's fast as shit, he's still undersized for the position. So that would Al's draft in size and speed. That's why Hayward Bay, he was 6 feet tall, could run really fast. he fit the criteria. Where we pick Carlos Francis, I mean, we pick Carlos Francis and we're watching Wes Welker and we're all watching it. And we're like, Welker's the best player. Carlos Francis ran the fastest. We take him. But, you know, we took him in, what, the fifth round, France, but he was 5'9". So he'll take a guy later, but not in the top five picks.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy listed at 5'11 and 2'8", 165, able to run that 4'2", 140, which is an NFL combine record.
In the grading system, he would have gotten the 5'11", 2". He might have met the criteria of height, even though you might want 6 feet, but at 165, he's going to – so he would be a Z player, which is undersized, and he would also be a B player, lacks bulk. So he's a ZB. And the highest grade he's going to be able to get is a 62 with those two letters on him. Now that puts him in the, you know, that's a second round type player, a potential starter. That's not bad. I'm just saying, but you have too many Z's and B's on your team. You become a little group of receivers.
Yeah. I mean, the guy can fly. 4.21 is just ridiculous.
So can Hardman. We'll talk about him after the break.
Hardman can fly. Could he return punts, though? Apparently not for the New York Jets after what happened there this past season. All right, we'll wrap it up with all the news and notes from around the NFL. This is the GM Shuffle.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Cole Hardman, shots fired at the New York Jets after this past season where Jets went ahead and traded him back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Hardman, the Jets are saying that he didn't want to return punts because he said that they picked a rookie over me and all this stuff. And it sounds like there's a little bit of salt on both sides of this year. But the big thing that Hardman had to say, though, on his podcast appearance there was that there was no standard offensively for the New York Jets. And I think that's something that we definitely saw watching the team. It's, I mean, you don't need to be a trained eye to watch that offense and realize that there's nothing good that's happening over there. What did you make of what he had to say about how the Jets, no standard, didn't know how to win. He wanted to go back to KC where, of course, they win every single year.
Yeah, I read his quotes. I didn't listen to it. But I read what he said. And obviously, it's pretty clear. You know, we can back up what he's saying based on the tape. Look, if you don't have a standard of excellence, if you're not striving for that, and this is where you get into that cloudy area where who's running the team, you know, as the head coach, he's got to set the standards, but he's given it to Nathaniel Hackett to run. And so there's never any organization or anything. I mean, it just proves that for anybody who's sitting out there thinking that they're going to just turn this around because Aaron Rodgers is coming out of the tunnel, it doesn't understand anything about organizations, championship teams, or building. I mean, none of it. It's just almost absurd. I mean, Woody Johnson, now I know he inherited this money from Johnson & Johnson, but like at some point, this has no chance of working. You know, it has no chance of working. I don't care what they do in the draft or free agency. I mean, Hardman was in the building. He saw it. Everybody's been in the building. I found the funniest thing is when the Jets gave permission to Zach Wilson to seek a trade. Like, really? Like, who's trading for Zach? I mean, maybe somebody will swap a seventh-round pick for you, but, I mean, you're not picking up the fifth year. It's a ridiculous number. You're taking on a contract that you don't want, right? You're not paying him whatever his salary is or taking on the guarantees. So, like, I mean, like, that was – I thought that was one of the funniest things of all time. I mean that just shows you, oh, we've given him permission. He's – you know, he's got – $4 million roster bonus. He's got guaranteed salary of 6.4. Oh, yeah, New York, he played so well for you. We'll take that money off your number and we'll go ahead and pay it to him. Like, come on, give me a break. Yeah. You're going to have to give somebody a draft pick to take him off your number. You need to seek the trade.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a Brock Osweiler type of trade there. But here's Zach Wilson in the third.
This is an NBA deal. You're going to have to take the money, Femi.
It's insane. It's not quite the same as the Chiefs giving Legarius Sneed permission to seek a trade. He's actually coveted. Like, he's a really good cornerback. He's a starter in the league, and right now he's expected to be on that tag, which is $19.8 million for cornerbacks there. But this is some of that more of a tag and trade sort of situation of what we're all expecting.
Right. I mean, look, and that's the thing. You got to decide, do I want to pay him, and then what am I giving up for him? So whatever I give up for him is going to be a cheap player, and I got to feel like, you know, I'm going to pay this number. You know, that's a team that you kind of feel like is really close, right? You know, but there's so much cap room out there that you could feel like you could take him in there and feel you're going to get a starting corner, you're going to pay him a lot of money, but you're going to have to give up a high draft pick. I mean, what do you think he goes for, a third? I mean, what does he go for? Why would you trade for him when you could probably just pay him? It goes back to the Montez Sweat situation. Yeah, if you're going to overpay him, you're going to get him. Why give up the two?
Yep, guys go where the money is. I mean, look at Mike Evans. Everyone said he wanted to play with an elite quarterback, and he signed that dotted line real quick when they gave him $25 million.
That qualifies in lying season. I'm playing for an elite quarterback and a team to win a championship. Oh, by the way, I'm signing back with the Bucks. Why are we believing anything? I mean, why are we believing anything? Money, you know, like, nothing says I'm sorry better than money. Nothing says hello better than money.
100%. It's like, you know what I want to do more than play with an elite quarterback? Be really, really rich. That's what I want to do.
Make deposit, right?
Yeah. And if you're Mike Evans, you've already won a Super Bowl, so you're just like, shit, at this point, let me just collect as much money as possible. Good for him,
though. And he should. He should. He's at the end of his career. He should make as much money as he can, put as much money in the bank to take care of his family and his children or whatever.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm all sport it, but don't come out and, you know, but I don't know if he said that, right?
No.
So that's just another aggregate, you know, that we're putting out there. This is what he said. Like, there's none of it, you know?
Yeah. Who knows where that's coming from? And it's not a,
right.
And even if he did say it, not a criticism of Mike Evans. I do the exact same thing, buddy. I do the exact same thing. So congratulations to you. Pop the bottle of champagne later on tonight. Last news and note that we wanted to get to here, though, is Patriots de facto general manager, I guess top executive is how we will say it, Elliot Wolf, made some interesting comments at the Combine. Talk about the culture change this year versus what it's been in years past under Bill Belichick. Said, quote, "We'll see if the culture has changed, but there's certainly more of an open, less hard-ass type vibe in the building that we can move forward with. It's about people feeling comfortable enough if there's an issue to say something." Your reaction to that is what?
I really like Elliot. I like him a lot. I listened to his whole presentation. You know, he changed the grading system, you know, which he has every right to do. He's, you know, his dad had the system in Green Bay, you know, and he's running the department. He's got freedom to do whatever he wants to do. But I think there is a little bit of a respect that was missing in the conversation that obviously, you know, he went there. They won a lot of Super Bowls there. But this whole notion of what Elliot said lends itself towards this whole narrative that's being put out there, starting with this documentary, which I've watched zero of it, but I've gotten a zillion texts about how slanted it is towards one side. And I think this was just another example. This was a paid political announcement, you know, by Elliot. You get up there, you talk about these things and talk about change because we want to divorce ourselves from the past, which they have every right to do, right? They have every right to do it. But to me, it's little bit of a disheartening conversation, because you could have done it a lot differently. You could have said, hey, look, they've had a lot of success here. They've won six Super Bowls. I'm more comfortable doing my grading system. That's why we changed. We won in Green Bay with this. You know, to attack the culture the way it is, you know, hard ass. I mean, to me, there's no need for that. But again, there's an agenda that's been going on since this ended from the Kraft side that has manifested itself through their documentary that's produced, which has really, I mean, I think everybody sees it for what it is. You know, what did NFL Films, Ken Rogers, the director of NFL Films, he came out and said, we've had nothing to do with that. I think, you know, they had nothing to do with the production of this documentary, because it is so one slanted, and it almost is active. Belichick was on vacation for 22 years. It's comical. I mean, they skip over the two Super Bowls. They skip over the game plan to stop Thurman, to stop Marshall Faulk in that Super Bowl, as if, you know, that came from somewhere else. But again, this is trying to change the narrative. You can do it a different way. But I think it's really kind of, it falls flat, because there isn't really, there's no authenticity to it. There's no real balance. If you're a journalist, Dove, you have to have balance and you have to have some kind of way to tell where you're getting your information. This looks too slanted. And I think Elliott just continued that narrative.
Yeah, I didn't think the comments were necessary. And like, I thought Gerard Mayo's comments were fine. He said, Bill did a great job for a long period of time. I don't want you guys to take this just because we're changing as shots towards the previous regime. Like, I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, he did that the next day. Yeah. That was the cleanup.
Cleanup
that
job.
That was cleanup in aisle three. You know, that's what that was, you know. Because, I mean, I don't know how much more they can keep dumping on a man who won six Super Bowls. Yeah, like, it's really almost comical at this point. It's like,
ridiculous.
Jesus, God. I mean, you bought the franchise for, what, $270 million, whatever you paid for it. It could be worth $8 billion. You don't think he had a lot to do with giving you the $8 billion? Maybe he didn't. You know, it was all done secretly in subversive way. I don't know. I was in the building for 3 years. I thought he had a lot to do with it, everything that was happening. Yeah. So. Yeah. It's almost comical.
Yeah, it's disheartening. And I say this as somebody who has never rooted for the Patriots outside of whenever I bet on them. Like I could not care less about the franchise. Like, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, but like, what they're doing and the stuff that's being said about Bill Belichick now after the fact, it's really like, this is one of the legends, one of the pillars of the game. Like, let's have a little bit of class here. As we go out there, speaking of class there, obviously sad news in the football world. Anybody who's covered the NFL, anyone who's watched the NFL or who's just is a fan of the game, ESPN insider Chris Mortensen passed away yesterday at the age of 72. He had been dealing with cancer for quite some time, since 2016. And Michael, I know he's somebody that you've spoken with many a times, and just reading all the tributes on social media yesterday, a lot of them sounded the same, like a really, really just genuine, nice person who loved the game, could teach you the game. And it's as football fans, we lost one of the pillars yesterday with Chris Mortensen passing away.
And I think as we started this podcast about the lack of integrity by these news aggregate people, and Dove, I'm talking about you, you know, that Chris exemplified that. You know, Chris, I can remember, you know, when I first met him, you know, he was reporting the news based on what he heard. He got sources. He documented the sources. Sometimes I didn't agree with what he said, but we remained friends throughout it because he was reporting what he heard. And we shared a lot of conversations about Bruce Springsteen. We shared a lot of conversations about football. And when I tweeted something that was right, he might tweet me back and say, you know, I know that to be a fact. Don't, you know, all these people are attacking you. So for me, you know, that shows you a lot about the character of the person. And I think that's what we saw with Mort. Clearly a character, had great character and great integrity. He wasn't looking for clicks. He wasn't looking for money to come from Twitter. He was looking to be right. And he endeared himself to the Manning family. He became very close to them. And I thought he did a great job when, you know, Adam Schefter left NFL Network and went into ESPN. Most people could have said, oh, I resent that. I didn't. And they had a great working relationship, which shows you, again, the character of Mort. So he will be missed. His process, his integrity, is something that is lacking. And you know, I thought Peter King, who retired, also, I thought it was great what he said about, you know, he was the driving force behind that goddamn most ridiculous story in all of football,
Deflategate.
And he finally backed off of it, which I think was great. And he regretted what happened. Now, I don't understand how they can justify taking $1 million of Robert Kraft's money and a draft pick away, but somehow they did, and they know they were wrong.
Yeah. No, it's like Peter King, obviously, for someone who grew up like wanting to write about football and wanted to cover football and media, like, that's one of the guys that's, he'll always be a legend in the game, as is Chris Mortensen. Like, the insider stuff that we talk about now, I mean, there's a plethora of insiders across networks, but Mort was one of the early guys that did it, and he was always plugged in, and you knew that if it was coming from Mort, it was trustworthy stuff coming from the top of an organization. So obviously, rest in peace. Obviously, we'll think about all of those who knew Chris Mortensen and loved ones and family and all of that regard there. It's a big loss in the football world, but we'll be thinking about Chris Mortensen as we wrap up this podcast. That does it for us today on this Monday. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman. Thank you to you, Michael. I'll talk to you on Thursday as we continue to inch towards the tampering period, buddy. I'll see you then.